best things. There are a lot of things that could be the best, but I've mentioned this before, but I spend at least a couple minutes a week browsing the various dog rescue websites because I love dogs. You know, I've always said, like, most of my life has been, like, large furry dogs, kind of, you know, huggable, really pettable, great dogs, but I also have a weakness for, like, really weird-looking chihuahuas.
Yeah.
So there's a little dog named Gizzy. Gizzy.
On the website?
On the website. Secondhand Hounds is the name of the rescue, I'll say that. Gizzy. G-I-Z-Z-Y.
Is it short for something?
I don't know. Gizzard.
Gizmo.
Maybe.
Gizmo. Gizmodo.
Yeah. And she just is the funniest looking dog I've ever seen, to the point that when I came across her picture at work today, I don't want to say I almost burst into tears, but I had a really weird reaction to the picture. So Gizzy is my best thing of the week, and I hope someone cool adopts her because...
You're not going to adopt her?
No.
You just look at dogs to
look
at
them? Yeah, to torture myself.
That seems, you know, weird.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I like it.
Yeah.
It's very Catholic.
Thank you. No one has ever called me that before, so thank you.
Self-punishing.
So Catholic, Alex.
I'm Catholic. Sorry.
My best thing was on Sunday, I got a call from a friend, and he was like, I'm at Lake Nokomis. Come here. It's like, okay. And I thought we were just going to, like, walk around the lake, but there was this thing called the National... pond hockey tournament or international national pond hockey tournament,
mm-hmm.
And there was tons of people there, and there was all these little rinks set up, and I have never watched hockey, really. Like, I used to go in high school, but that's just to, like, show up and, like, wear your sweatshirt, but you don't watch
thing
it
of nachos,
yeah, and then you go. I had never really watched hockey before, and it was so cool because you were so up close, and my friend's team. And then, you know, my friend who invited me, our friend, was playing, and they made it to the championship. And so
nice.
It was, like, really talented hockey players, and a lot of them played across seas, like, in, you know, leagues over in Croatia and places, or some people played professionally.
So, like, real hockey players.
Real hockey players, and it was really cool to see that up close, and just felt quintessentially Minnesotan.
Yeah.
And I never do stuff like that.
It was a great weekend for being outside.
It was, like, 40 degrees. It's crazy.
God, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Hiking in state parks and biking and everything like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it time for me to do my best thing?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. All right, let's do it. My best thing from the week is, I feel like I'm going to get a hard time for this, tailored sweatpants.
What?
What?
Tailored sweatpants?
All right, so, like, sweatpants, you know, are classically, like, bad fashion.
Sure.
Like, if you go out in your sweatpants, it says you've given up on life. Well, this is... the next level of sweatpants, where they have kind of a skinnier fit.
They're, like, the tapered in on the bottom.
Yeah, they're more fashionable.
Yeah, I have a pair of those, and they have, like, actually have a tuxedo stripe down the side. I still only wear them as pajamas. I still don't think they're acceptable to wear outside.
Do they have... what color
have you been
they?
Wearing them?
They're gray.
In public?
Well, yes.
To work?
No, never. I would never do that, but I have worn them along the street, and I felt... very fashionable.
Yeah. Do they have, like, front and back pockets? Or is it just, like, the two side pockets?
Just the two side pockets,
okay.
Yeah.
Were you running on the street when you were wearing them on the street?
No, I had sweatpants and boots on.
Oh. Are they like...
like fashionable boots?
Fashionable boots.
Oh,
are they... Are they drop crotch? Are you,
no,
like,
they are not drop crotch. There's a difference between that and, like, what I have here. Yeah. You're not approving of this.
Wow.
I knew that was going to happen.
Sorry.
I like tailored sweatpants.
I'm kind of I think I've said it before, I'm pro comfort at all times, so I'm going to have to agree with you here. So.
Could you be comfortable and stylish?
I think so. I don't think the two have to be mutually exclusive. So, I don't know if it's for me. Just going to say that, but, you know, just appreciate your freedom.
You should try it.
I have a pair of these tailored sweatpants, and I think that they're cute. And I wore them to coffee the other day, but with tennis shoes to make it look like I was going to go work out. I wasn't, but I wanted to give off that impression.
That impression? Oh.
Yeah, because I don't want people to think that I actually think it's okay.
Yeah. Got to keep up an illusion.
I don't really care, though.
I know. No, I know. I can tell. I'm just kidding.
I don't think I only ever wear normal pants when I'm out. Never, like... sweatpants, never
well,
jammies. I'm sorry.
Patrick
not saying
and
I'm better
know
than
what
you,
we're getting you for Christmas next year, then.
Oh,
some tailored
man.
Sweatpants. Tailored sweatpants.
Yes. They may be out of fashion by then, though. Who knows?
Oh, wait, you just said my name.
Oh, yeah. Who are you? Why are you here?
Yeah, we were one, like, we should just say that there's this total rando in the room here, and we don't really know who he is. So, who are you?
I'm Patrick Stevenson of 30 Days of Biking
and
Pedal Hub.
You're one of our partners in podcasting, Pips.
Pips. Yes.
Here at NPR.
There we go.
And, you know, we're saying hi to some new hosts.
Yeah. We're excited you're here. I listen to Pedal Hub quite a bit, and it's really good.
Thank
so
you.
I'm a little like starstruck from across the room.
Don't be.
No. Okay.
You go by Patio Mensch on
Patio
Twitter.
Patio Mensch is my Twitter handle, yeah.
And you're just a dude around town.
Yeah.
And we're glad to have you.
An aging dude who is doing less. Well, I still do a lot of stuff, but I'm not like
sure
as out there as I used to be.
Sure.
Why Patio Mensch on Twitter?
Good question. Okay, so Patrick is my name. So my nickname was then Patty.
Mm-hmm.
And then I transformed that somehow into Patio Man.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I signed up for Twitter, and it was like, Patio Man is not available. So I was like, all right, Mensch, that's a good word.
Is there a, are you German?
No, I'm not at all.
All right.
Yeah. Wait, I actually am.
There you go.
I am a little German.
I'm glad we could come to this.
But Mensch is like strong, honorable man, which is not a word you should apply to yourself, unless you have like the traditional, like generic, like it just means man.
Interesting.
But I did it anyway.
Cool.
So we're going to, you know, we're just going to get to know Patrick a little bit. Going to talk about Pedal Hub, 30 Days of Biking. Everybody bikes, but Tess and I think, are kind of on the more casual side.
Yeah.
So we want to know what it's like to be a real bike freaker 24/7, year round.
That's what I am.
And then we're going to talk all this business about labels,
yeah.
Brands.
Is that a millennial tendency?
To label? I think
yeah.
So. I feel like we're all trying to give ourselves some sort of title that's maybe not millennial.
Mm-hmm.
Fit into some other category.
Trying to avoid the insult, if you
were.
Yeah,
move past that word.
So,
let's
yeah.
move past that word.
Yeah. We're going to get into all of that and so much more. Laughs will be had. Energy drinks will be drunk, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
We have a lot of Monster in the studio.
Oh, God. So, I'm Alex Goderud.
I'm Tess Weinberg.
And we're joined by Patio Mensch himself, Patrick Stevenson. He's going to help us pop till we drop.
Boom.
Patrick, so I want to know more about biking. I want to learn more about what you do. I like biking.
Mm-hmm.
I like bikes in general. I think they're nice. But I want to know what got you into biking and why you're so freaking obsessed with it.
Wow, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
Why I'm so... Okay, so we've actually gone over this on Pedal Hub, which is the podcast I do. Why am I so obsessed? I think it all started back when I was a kid, when I first got injured. My origin story is that I fell in love with biking when I first got injured on my bike. So I have like a little shrimpy scar on my leg. And then bike became the key to my freedom when I was slightly older. It was like my first form of transportation.
Yeah.
So it was an escape from my parents, and I could get away. So, like, bikes are freedom. Bikes are escape.
I like what you just said about origin story. Do you think everyone has, like, an origin story for biking? Is that something that you guys have, like, talked about in bike culture?
Yeah, kind of like a moment when you fell in love with it where you're like, oh, dude, bikes are for me. This is my thing.
That's
yeah.
so cool. It's like a religion. Like, when did you find out you got saved?
Yeah.
It's like, but with biking.
But
yeah,
with
I'm
biking.
Actually tattooed on my leg with my religion.
Biking.
Which is bikes.
Do you have a bike?
Yeah.
That's 30 Days of Biking. The logo for 30 Days of Biking is on my leg, which is a triple X.
Okay, good segue. What's 30 Days of Biking?
All right. 30
Thanks,
30
Patrick.
Days of Biking is a pledge to ride your bike every day in April, regardless of the weather, regardless of the distance. So you can go around the block, you can go to the store, you can go to school, you can go to work. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to commute every day. You just have to ride your bike a little bit.
And why April?
Yeah.
April is the kickoff to spring. So April's kind of like the confluence of all these different seasons. You get snow, you get rain, you get sunlight. It just kind of all melds together into this one big mess of a month.
Mm-hmm.
So in my mind, are you saying, is the purpose to kind of get Minnesotans out there and experience all the different types of biking? If you do get snow, you get rain, it might be really sunny. Is that the reason to do 30 Days of Biking, or why?
Yeah, it's just kind of like, just get out there and do it no matter what. And this is it is a tough month for it. Like,
this past year, it was like terrible for
biking.
It
actually wasn't too bad compared to the year before. It was a pretty nice one. Okay. It did snow on the first day, like a blizzard on the first day. Mm-hmm. So it was like entry level, like learning curve stuff.
So did you commute every day on your bike?
I do not. Okay. I wish that I did.
What's the like percentage of bike to not bike, I should say?
I would say I probably get in like 3 to 4 days a week.
Okay.
Yeah.
In the winter, does that go up or down?
Oh, it goes. It's actually gone up for me this year.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
Because like, okay, so this week, for example, I've actually biked not at all. So like the average is like 3 or 4 days, but like when it's not sub-zero or like really cold, I'm like, this is kind of boring. Like I want more of a challenge.
Interesting.
And so it would have been easy this week. So like, what's the big passion? Where does my passion
appear? What's the point?
I remember like my senior year of college, it didn't snow until very late in the year, but it got cold kind of early and like, up until a certain age, I was the kind of person who was like, oh, I'll just like, as long as there's no snow or ice, I'll bike. Doesn't matter how cold it is. So, I biked into like December 15th or something, and then it finally snowed, and I was like, forget that.
I think I remember that year.
It was a pretty good year, you know, just going to class at 8 a.m. But then, like, ever since then, since I've become a soft, flabby adult instead of a lean, starving college student, I'm just like, no, I'll pay for parking. So, how do you deal with the, you know, the laziness that sets in?
Do you feel guilt?
Oh, yeah, big time.
Religion, that's perfect.
It just admitting that those 2 days that I don't bike, I'm like, oh.
Are all your bike friends going to make fun of you?
No, if they do, you know what? I don't care.
You're beyond the haters.
Yeah, because like I used to be all about that at first because I was like, oh, man, they're not going to think I'm a real cyclist. But you know what? I live a real life. Sometimes you can't do it. Sometimes I like to get a ride in from my dad, and that's that.
So do you own a car?
I do own a car, yeah.
Cool. And how far is your commute?
I live in downtown Minneapolis, and I commute to downtown St. Paul.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Yeah.
Take the train.
I love the train. I love the Green Line.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's the, changing topics here, what's the gnarliest accident you've ever gotten in?
Oh.
Just saying.
That's scary.
There hasn't been enough gore on this show yet.
Okay.
All right. My worst one was where I was bicycling along Bryan Avenue. Do you know where Bryan Avenue is? Okay.
In South?
Yeah, which is kind of like a bike way.
There's
so it's
a boulevard
like,
on that bike.
Yeah,
boulevard.
It is a boulevard. It actually wasn't a boulevard when I got hurt on it, though. Mm. So I was biking along it, and I was like going to meet my girlfriend at the bike shop. And I was just biking along. I was kind of close to the cars, and somebody opened their door right into me.
Oh. Mm.
It happens.
That's my biggest fear.
I got doored.
Yeah.
I flipped over the door, and I landed on my back. And somehow
flat,
in the process.
Flat on your back.
Flat on my back on the road. And I broke both my arms.
Oh,
so
no
I was like,
way.
I was like pinned against, I could not sit up.
Yeah.
This is a good topic for Pedal Hub, actually. Is it a little too gruesome? Whatever. I couldn't stand up, and the girl who hit me was like, are you okay? And I was like, no.
No.
I still had room for sarcasm. So. Yeah, it just, that was my worst one.
If you've gotten injured a few times, you're just about to go into another story, it doesn't deter you from biking at all?
Well, that's the thing. I need it so much to be happy. Like, I was scared at first after that. Like, I really, really wanted to ride again, but there was also, like, some, just like your body is more scared to do it again.
Sure.
Yeah.
But literally before my arms even healed well enough, I was back on my bike.
Hmm.
Like, by September.
And
I think it happened in June. And I was still going through physical therapy.
You were at like the edge of what was considered like medically safe or whatever. Interesting.
And then I fell in some seal coat gravel on the first day that I rode too. So I was like, I tore up my arms and like I couldn't move my arm again. It was like I busted it all over again.
Hmm.
Well, I am not encouraging you guys to bike with this story.
If I was your mom, I would be like, don't do that, man. That just sounds so terrible.
This is a mom-free zone, okay?
Sorry.
So you guys do like bikes though?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a casual summer biker. I biked enough this past summer purely as an effort to, like, avoid paying for parking and, you know, dealing with downtown on, you know, a weekday at 5 p.m., that kind of thing in my car, that when winter set in this year, I have gained 5 pounds and have not been able to lose them, which, like, that was a new development this year. Like, this was the first year I biked enough to have an impact on physical fitness.
Nice.
So I appreciated that.
Yeah, I bike quite a bit in the summer, like biking most days to work. I lived in like very southwest Minneapolis and I was biking to Seward, which was like a pretty good, for me, that was good. I was only filling up my gas tank like once a month, which for now it's like every week probably. So I was biking a lot, but I learned how to ride a bike when I was 20. So it's been kind of like this new sense of freedom that like totally changed how I saw transportation for myself.
Yeah.
Which maybe that's my origin story.
can you walk us through how you learned to ride at 20?
Well, so, okay, it's kind of, it's a stretch. I did learn how to ride when I was a kid, like other kids, but I went on this like terrible, terrible bike ride with my family. My dad's always been super into biking, and I was like 6 or 7, and this, you know, like 6 mile family trip ended up, we ended up getting really lost, and it was pre-smartphone GPS type stuff. Mm-hmm. And so it ended up being this like 30 mile bike ride, and the sun had set, and it was just terrifying, and it was so terrible, and like bugs were flying in my mouth, and I remember just at that point like damning biking forever.
Yeah.
So it took me like 14 years to get over that.
That makes me really sad.
So after that day, you didn't ride a bike?
No, not until I was 20. And then
not even like around the neighborhood or anything?
No.
Wow.
No.
One traumatic experience.
Yeah, it was like that's done. I'm over it. I'm pretty stubborn. So yeah. And then when I was 20 and living in Minneapolis, all my friends biked, and I was like, okay, maybe this is something that I need to give a try again. I have a summer birthday, and my dad bought me a cruiser. And they're called like townie bikes, like those really clunky ones. For my birthday, for my 20th birthday. And so I learned on that. It took a while. It was terrifying. Like, I was really shaky on it. I remember gripping the handlebars so tight, like, my knuckles would turn white. And my arms would be sore from holding it so tight because I was so scared. And then I got pretty good at that. And then I started borrowing my mom's commuter bike. And then I got a road bike. So it kind of progressed naturally.
Nice.
But I don't think I'm a super safe biker now. I break rules.
So, I got a question for you guys then.
Yeah.
Because something I think about a lot is, like, I don't remember exactly, I do, like, how I transitioned to being an all-weather biker. But, like, I'm like, people love biking. People around here love biking, like, and it's like they just decide to stop.
Right.
And I'm like, if you love, I know you love biking, like, why don't you just continue on and at least try in the winter? Why are you giving up on it? So, like, what do you think it would take to get you to take that next step and bike in the winter?
I don't like I really paid lip service to starting winter biking this year. Like, I was really heading for it in my head, and then it snowed, and I was, you know, it was pitch black at 7:30 in the morning, and I was like, nope, I'm staying in bed the extra 45 minutes and not doing it. I don't know. What would it take?
For me, there's
gear. I don't have the right bike, and I've been, you know,
it's been
on my list to like get
started tires.
Yeah, or, you know, any kind of, like, what do they call it? Just, like, you know, halfway between a road bike and a hybrid.
Oh, like a hybrid bike, yeah.
Just, you know, something that can handle a little bit of snow.
Right.
I wouldn't do it
on the, like, you know, foot-deep snowfall day, but I don't know.
There seems to be, you know, like, if you go to, like, a new gym or something, and that first time going in is really intimidating, and you don't really know like where the water fountain is, and you can't find the bathroom, and you don't know where to put the weights back or something. Like, there's just a huge learning curve, but you know it'll eventually be okay. But there's like kind of that transition period. That with biking initially was so terrifying for me that like taking the extra step of like trying to go into a bike store and like ask the wrong questions and then be vulnerable over again with it.
Yeah.
And then tough.
Do the wrong things on the road as well. Because there seems to be kind of a different strategy with winter biking, like where you bike on the road.
It's actually, I mean, this is stuff that you learn as you go and do it too. Like, there are jerks out there who are going to judge you as you do it.
Right.
Like, and be like, oh, that person's a noob. But literally the vast majority of people are just like,
yeah.
Like, we're so happy you're biking. Like, there's that thing where, I totally identify with what you're saying about going to a gym where you're like, everyone on the treadmills or lifting weights is watching me and being like, that person's new here.
Right.
There is that to some extent with biking, but the vast majority, again, is like really supportive, encouraging, just wants you to do it.
Yeah. No.
And I think the comfort level thing is totally fair. Like, within the last 2 years, I think, have I ever gotten used to thinking like a biker? It was, you know, I would always think about it kind of like, I'm not driving today, but I'll do everything exactly the same. So it's like, drive on all the, or bike on all the major arteries that I would normally take, and like, don't, you know, just kind of don't think about it as a biker. And only, you know, certainly this last year and maybe a little bit the year before, I got more systematic about like, okay, how can I make this more pleasant for me? How can I make this smarter and safer and more, you know, enjoyable overall? And that really like opened some doors to like, you know what, this can be a really viable lifestyle, mm-hmm. you know, to the point where I was like, I think I could, if I were winter biking right now, I would have sold my car by now. I was ready to like, you know, F the car because, mm-hmm. you know, slave to gas and all that. Right. But then it snowed and it turns out I am actually a baby. So.
This was a tough winter to go with right away. Like it was a tough one to start because it was like nice. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's winter like right away. Like yeah. it dipped and got really snowy. Like it was tough yeah. right away.
And then actually right at the end of my biking season, I got into my first accident. It wasn't even really an accident, but it was like the first crash I had had since I was 8 or 9. Uh-huh. And that really like, you know, effed up the chain and like the wheels out of balance. And now it's just kind of in the shop.
Yeah.
By which I mean my garage. So,
it's one of those extra steps that you have to overcome to make it
yeah,
happen,
you know,
which is very detrimental.
No, it happens.
So 30 days of biking every day in April. What's the goal? Like, what do you hope that people will get out of it? Or why was it important for you to curate that?
Well, it's been 6 years now, and it's a lot of work every year. But I get into it again every year because I'm really passionate about it. And I think it goes back to this idea that I want people to just do it. Like, just mm-hmm. get out there and ride. Don't think too much about it. Don't think about who's judging you. Don't think too much about which bike you're riding. Don't think about what you're wearing and whether it's correct. Just ride. And I think that as, like, millennials, that's a philosophy that serves us well. Don't think about it. Don't hesitate. Just do mm-hmm. it. Like, we're people mm-hmm. we're a generation that just does stuff. And that's what 30 Days of Biking is about, too. It's like, get over these hurdles. Get over your mental hurdles. Fix your bike up and just get out there and ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to do that every day and eventually realize that cycling as a lifestyle is very doable for them,
mm-hmm.
where before they considered it like a huge, like insurmountable obstacle.
Have you ever not accomplished the 30 days of biking yourself?
Oh, you're going real.
I want to know.
Back in 2012, I missed a day.
Yeah.
Were you sick? What happened? Were you sick?
I think it was one of those situations where I just like went to work and I got home and I was like, it was like 11:59. I was like, shit, I forgot to ride. All right. I remember one day where it was like that. And I rode at like 12:30 at night. And I was like, that's not good enough, dude.
Oh,
you
wow.
missed your day.
On a technicality.
Yeah. Wow. But I'm honest about it. I mean, yeah. like.
I would totally yeah. lie about that. That's good.
Would you?
That you're so honest about
so, that. So what's the most, when you're done with it, what's the most satisfying part of it for you? Is it like the person who says, I would never have done this without, or like, I never thought I could do this. Is that the satisfying part or?
So are you talking about as like the person or as a person riding it or as an organizer?
As, I guess sort of all three, like what, when you're thinking about your personal goals for the project, mm-hmm. like when someone says something to you, what is it that makes it, you know, worth it?
I think that I just like getting people really excited about bikes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about that excitement for me. I like getting people amped up. I'm like, and it's that
you're
kind of thing is
clenching your
for me.
Arms right now.
Oh, I have a lot of passion. I just yeah, that's the thing is like I like that transitional. I like seeing that in action where I mean like there's so many different functions for 30 Days of Biking. Last year somebody used it as a way to get over the death of her boyfriend who had died in a hit and run from bikes. Mm. And she had a similar experience where she was like, I hate bikes now.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ride them anymore because of what happened to my boyfriend. And then to watch her story unfold and to see that at the end was beautiful.
Wow.
So like people's stories, seeing that in action, like the change is why I do it. For myself, I like pushing myself harder. I mean, like, I think I hate to be one of those people, like, but I think I would probably bike every day anyway.
Sure.
In spring. It's just much easier than it is in the winter.
Gives you a reason.
Yeah. I mean, it just like gives me a reason to push myself harder. So last year I actually forced myself to like ride even more every week. So I would start out and then I'd get more miles and more miles and more miles. Mm.
Cool.
Wow.
So it's an excuse to push yourself as a cyclist.
No. So you've got this very visible bike community thing that you've been working on for, you say this will be the sixth year or the seventh year?
Well, how do you count that? Because like I started it in 2010 and now it's 2015. So like technically it's the sixth year, but that's 5 years.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I mean, but you know, the sixth iteration
I don't
of 30
get
days
math.
Of biking. But you also, as we mentioned, you also are a NPR News podcast host.
Pip.
Of a partner in podcasting. Give you a seal of approval. For a pedal hub. Then. Yeah.
There we go.
Did I get on the mics?
Yeah, I think so. Sorry if I broke your arm there. For Pedal Hub, which is a dynamic, freewheeling, awesome discussion of biking. And why do you think biking needs a podcast?
I think the reason it needs a podcast is because it's this huge, like, multi-angled subculture of the world that has not been tapped into as far as discussion and interaction and conversation. Mm-hmm. I said the same thing twice. But, like, it needs exposure. Like, this is, like, especially in Minneapolis where we have so much going on, this is, like, we need to shine a light on this stuff because there's so much stuff. There's stories, there's people interacting with it in so many different ways, like art, events, there's giveaway stuff like free bikes for kids. There's just so many ways to interact, and we got to tell those stories.
Yeah.
We got to have those discussions. And this is an important time, too, because so much is changing. The infrastructure is changing. People are working to make this happen.
Yeah. Nice.
Who are your co-hosts? It's not just you on the podcast.
I have Amber Dahlman on there with me, who's with St. Paul Women on Bikes.
Cool.
And Gene Oberpriller, Gino, his name is Gino, of One-on-One Bicycle Studio.
A very nice bike studio.
Yeah, it is.
That have helped me out in a jam many a time.
So it's like kind of like I'm the millennial of the group.
Mm-hmm.
Amber is the Gen Xer, and Gene is the boomer. Generations colliding.
Well, that's, you know, having a multi-generational perspective on it is refreshing.
Yeah.
You know, there's all sorts of stories you guys tell that are just incredible.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Even as someone who's a, like I said, seasonal biker, I really enjoy listening to the podcast. And I tell other people who don't bike, I'm like, it's just a really good podcast. Cool. You guys are great. It's really entertaining.
I really, as a person who is angry all of the time, I really appreciated your recent episode on when to not engage with drivers. Like, you know, I've been on both sides of that coin where I've been like, you know, swearing up a storm at a driver. And then I've been that guy who's like, come on.
Yeah.
Come on while I'm in my car. So I really, you know, it was a great episode.
That was an interesting takeaway for me because like Gino of One-on-One Bicycle Studio is very much like the instigator personality who likes to make trouble and like throw grenades in the middle of conversations. And I was expecting him to be like, no, I argue with them back. Like to cause chaos. But he was like, avoid it.
Yeah.
Just move on.
Just move on.
Yeah.
It's good life advice in general.
Anger feeds anger. Like, that's what they want back from you is anger. So don't give it to them. That makes them win. Either side.
Yeah.
I have a side note question. Do you feel like bikes are the best invention ever made?
Wow. No, I think that tailored sweatpants are.
Nice. Yeah. Hell yeah. Sticking to your guns. I love it.
You know what? Yes, I do. Yeah, it changed my life so much that for me it is. Yeah. It's one of the best things in my life. It brought me so many places. Yes.
Literally and figuratively.
Keep it 100.
Patrick is a biker, a bicyclist. I'm a biker, like a motorcyclist, you know, different kind of biker.
Cool.
I ride a motorcycle. I'm not a biker. But I don't want to talk to Patrick anymore, okay?
All right, yeah, cut me out.
I want to talk to Patio Mensch. Oh. Can I talk to Patio Mensch? Is he, like, here?
Yeah, he is.
Is he, like, a different person? Okay, so I have to say, like, we said we're going to talk about personal brands, and you have a well-formulated Twitter bio where you talk about, like, your personal interests and your professional life and your, you know, just sort of what you do in, you know, 140 characters or 160 or however many they give you.
Should I read it?
Yes.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. All right, here we go. Patrick Stevenson, Patio Mensch, copywriter at NPR, co-host at Pedal Hub NPR, director at 30 Days of Biking.
Mm.
Wow, this is super professional stuff. Occasional blogger at Star Tribune, ginger beard, coffee addict. Should now say monster addict.
Yeah. Too much product placement, though.
It is. Too much monster.
Can we get some money?
So what are you getting at?
Do you, like, how much do you own all of that in your personal life? You know, where branding is such a weird... is it a millennial thing? Do you feel the need to, like, express all your interests as like, you know, facets of your personality?
Mm-hmm.
Do you keep anything back is what I'm saying?
I feel like I don't. Like, I feel like it's really important for me to be like on Twitter, that's who I am.
Mm-hmm.
I give you who I am as a person. That's the way I feel I am about Pedal Hub. That's the way I feel about 30 Days of Biking. That's the way I feel about my tweets.
Sure.
And my social persona. Yeah, that's me. I'm not like, I don't feel like it's crafted. I feel like it's just there.
It's an authentic extension, like a mirror of who you are.
Yeah, that's what I want it to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go the other way. I'm all like smoke and mirrors, man. I don't want people to know.
Really?
Which is strange.
On your social media?
Yeah.
Hmm.
All I do on, I think I've mentioned this before, but all I do on Twitter now is retweet funny things that Nancy Grace says.
I love that about your Twitter account. I was like, is that a bot? Or are you doing it yourself?
And I changed my Twitter bio to read Nancy Grace retweet bot.
Yeah.
But I don't think I actually had a what I would classify as a nightmare the other week that I actually had ruined my like 2-year streak of not tweeting with some really like, oh, I really love this movie, or like had a great taco or something. And I was like, you idiot. You had such a good streak. But I don't know why that is. Like, why am I, maybe that's my brand, is like smoke and mirrors, don't want people to know.
That's a perfectly legitimate
brand. But I'm like a Swedish, dude, so like gotta keep it. Tess, what about you? What's your brand? If I had to choose like 3 words, it would be like, you know, writer, podcaster, musician, you know? Just kind of very surface level,
periods?
Sort of professional, yeah.
With periods in
with
between
periods.
Each one. Boom, boom, boom.
Wait, were you saying those for you or for me?
That would be for me.
Oh, okay.
I don't know you.
Yeah, I was like, are you giving me titles over here, man?
I'm sorry.
I don't know. It all really like makes me uncomfortable. It's anxiety driving for me to have to give myself names or descriptions. And I think part of it is like, what if I don't live up to that in the way that I see myself? It's like it causes more harm for me than good to like give myself names or like put myself into categories. Because, you know, I could, okay, based on the things I'm interested in, it's like, okay, I'm a podcaster, podcast host, sure. Podcasting. I'm a musician. I do marketing and PR and whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm like a friend to people, I guess.
Nice.
But what if people don't feel that way about me? You know, like what if I don't do a good enough job to like prove those things to other people?
Yeah.
And I know I'm just proving them to myself, but then why do I have to put a title out there for other people to perceive it?
Right.
You know, I just want to be like, human, what's up?
Sure. Do you feel like kind of a weird spotlight effect?
Yeah, totally. Okay. Yeah.
How does that contrast? Here's a plug. You're playing a show tonight with your band Murder Shoes, for which you are the lead singer. How does that contrast? Like, how does, you know, how does that effect contrast with real life? You know, when you're performing a show, what makes that different from, you know, when people are like, oh, who did this person tweet at? Who's Tess?
Yeah.
You know, see your bio. It's kind of two different things.
Yeah, I don't know if I fully understand the question, but like,
it's okay. I don't either.
Okay, when I perform, it's so removed from anything else that I'm trying to project. It's just like that is the most genuine extension of me, I feel.
Wow.
Mm. So any of the other stuff just kind of it goes away. But that's just when I'm performing. Right before and right afterwards, I'm like really concerned about, you know, like, are people gonna like my dress, or am I gonna sound bad, or you know, it is so anxiety driving for me. So I really just try not to think about it at all. Like anytime those like scary thoughts come up, I just like think about something else. But social media does that a lot for me. It kind of brings me back to that point, like right before I'm supposed to go on stage, even if I'm just on the couch, it's like, man, like I'd rather not try to project myself in any way. I'd rather just be myself and have that be okay.
And let people recognize that rather than feeling like you have to live up to an expectation.
Exactly.
But what if you don't see it as like a performance? What if you see it as just a conversation?
Right.
Because
which would be,
the
normal way to see that, but I'm really anxious all the time. So
I talk about this a lot though. I'm like, when I'm selling people on Twitter, I'm just like, it's not like you have to like broadcast your thoughts and everything has to be super like tailored and and like molded and stuff. Just see it as talking to somebody. I'm talking to you guys right now. This is tweeting.
Right.
This is tweeting
and
back and forth.
I have started I think, be more like genuine about Twitter for me. Like I'm getting more comfortable with it, but the whole bio thing just describing myself in a few words, I think that's what really puts a damper on it for me.
The one, right.
The branding, like the actual just few words that brand you, you know?
Yeah, I think the one that made me really self-conscious about how you brand yourself, specifically on the internet, is when, what's the phrase? Like, opinions are mine only.
And
it's like, I hope so.
Our teas are not endorsements.
Yeah. Snarky, watch out. Like, you don't have to, you know, come on, man. That's catty old me looking at people's Twitter profiles going, I hope so, when they say their opinions are their own.
So the thing that's intimidating, though, is the idea of boiling yourself down to just a few words. Is that it?
Yeah, and it just, you know, here's the thing is, like, that I contrast that with something like your LinkedIn profile, mm-hmm. where you have, I mean, this is a very capitalistic way to look at it, but you have, like, professional successes to celebrate, and you have a list of achievements to sell, but then when you're, like, all I do is read and, like, play music and drive to and from work in my spare time, like, how do I translate that into something that is sexy and admirable and, like, jealousy inducing on Twitter, mm-hmm. which is also a very cynical way of looking at things. But I just, you know, I don't think what I do in my personal life would measure up to trying to distill it into, like, what would I even say? I haven't thought about it in so long. I don't know what my bio would be anymore.
What is your bio now? Oh, it's just
Nancy
Grace,
Grace bot? Retweet
bot.
Tess, I like that bio that you came up with, and where it was like, I'm just a person, yo.
I'm just a person. Maybe that's what I'll change mine to. Mine is a lot like yours.
What was yours? Yeah, what's yours?
It's weird
to bring up this thing where I'm like, I'm all about being authentic and a real person for you, and then you're like, wait, but your bio is a series of titles.
Yes, let me get my phone so I can tell you who I am.
I'm not accusing you of being fake by any means.
No, I know, I get it. Like, there's definitely like some dissonance there between what I'm saying and
there's some like authorial stuff going on where you get to kind of rewrite what you do in the real world into a digital medium. It's like when, you know, when Gwyneth Paltrow is an actress and entertainer, but she's also branding herself as this, you know, like lifestyle coach,
goop guru. Yeah, I'm in the goop. I'm dealing with poop.
I hate that so much.
The word goop?
Yeah.
Did you get your bio?
Yeah, yeah. It's co-host, Pop Till We Drop for NPR News. Marketing manager for Cocoon Fashion. That's the company I work for. Vocalist, Murder Shoes, and existential thinker, kinda, period.
Mm. I like that.
See, but that's like a very natural extension of you. That's a very like good, well-written bio.
Thank you.
To the extent that I, you know.
Wait, do you think mine is poorly written?
Yeah.
Sam.
It's so hacky.
No.
But it says ginger beard in it.
Yeah, I like that.
Which is totally 100% correct. So.
The crowning touch of yours, though, is the kind of.
Kind
of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's personality right there.
Thanks, guys. It's just, I think with personal branding, people can get it really, okay, what it actually is just you being yourself, and we happen to have these platforms that brands also use. So, right, it's a personal brand. That makes sense. But I think it's hard not to get like almost too self-aware with it, and we're just put on these pedestals, you know, which is Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, and we're doing it to ourselves, but it's like, how do you not become obsessed with it or like so self-aware that it's almost damaging to your own psyche? And that's kind of the point where I'm at. And I wrote a song today that's called Social Media Can, I don't know if this is super inappropriate, can SMD, basically?
Yeah, I was going to say SMD.
Yeah, that's what the song is called. It's SM Can SMD. It's about looking at your ex's Twitter and Instagram and like getting caught up in them again. But it's like just this like farcical output that like has nothing to do with your own life.
Yeah, I still do that too.
It's hard not to like.
Yeah, I'm 31 years old and I'm still doing that.
Yeah, thank you.
It's weird.
Yeah, it's hard to like remove yourself completely from that. I
feel like all this personal branding stuff is excusable, though, because like I myself like came from an environment where like you had to like I needed a job and I needed to like promote myself and get myself in a position where I can. So it's like you're selling yourself constantly. I think we need to sell ourselves to get by, especially if you work in marketing.
That's like the scariest thing you've ever said in the 40 minutes we've been talking.
Really?
Yeah, that's terrifying to me.
Yeah,
sell yourselves to get by?
Yeah.
That's what
it's
said?
It's very, I just always have struggled with the phrase, you know, personal brand, because it's, you know, a brand is like chips, a brand is an airline, a brand is beer or something. And then I feel like when people first started saying personal brand, it was kind of ironic, you know, like a weird appropriation of corporate speak. But now it's totally accepted that you can be like, yes, I'm working on my personal brand. And you're like, what?
Yeah.
Did you really just say that?
It
seems inauthentic, but...
Yeah, I was reading an article and people were saying that now personal, like, aesthetic is, like, becoming a much more accepted term for that. I think it's kind of equally as douchey, but, I mean, it's just, like,
I feel like aesthetic is more of what aesthetic is, like, your fashion choice.
Yeah, it's a little
like
bit more pretentious.
How you choose to, like, put yourself, present yourself.
Tailored sweatpants.
Tailored sweatpants. That is
okay,
an aesthetic.
I was involved in a discussion about this on Twitter. Can I read you guys my tweet about it that I showed you earlier?
Yeah.
So the discussion was, it was like hashtag millennial talk. And somebody very sincerely said, how do I establish my personal brand? How do I start to define that? But I was like, just do stuff that you like. Do stuff that is fun for you.
Yeah.
And your personal brand will emerge from that. So I guess like with my bio, I'm just like, I love public radio.
Mm-hmm.
I love writing stuff. I love being on a show. I love bikes. That's kind of what it's about. I'm establishing loves, you know?
Yours came from a very real place and a very like grounded understanding of your life. It's just when you see like when you see someone who's still in college that's like, future marketer, you know, I don't know how to describe it.
Yeah.
It's just very, like,
I'm a storyteller.
Without seeming like a dick, but...
Yours is just genuine, and it's really refreshing because I think there can be a lot of disingenuous representations of people.
Yeah.
So when you're talking about personal branding, I don't hate it, so
that's
thanks.
That's cool.
Thanks.
What if I called myself a ninja or a guru?
Please do that.
Amazing.
Please call yourself a guru of everything, and then I will never I'll unfollow you immediately.
Guru at NPR.
Copyright on guru. Bike
no,
guru.
Definitely not.
Beard guru.
I'm a guru of nothing. I like it.
Guru of nothing. Oh,
no, that's your personal brand.
Guru of nothing. Nihilist maven.
Alex got a rune.
Yeah. Ooh, I love that. Holy shit.
Kind of.
Kind of.
We've covered a lot. It feels like we've been on this journey together for so long in such a good way, though. So thanks, Patrick, for coming on.
Yeah, you betcha. You guys are really nice. You said some really nice things to me.
We like you. Thanks for coming.
No usually problem. Usually we just spend all of our time insulting each other, so it's nice to...
Oh, I've heard it.
So,
oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. So, you know, had a hella sesh here and keep on trucking.
Thanks for talking to me, guru of nothing and existential thinker, kind of.
Aw, thank you. Thank you. Can we do an on-mic fist bump here? We have to get, like, right in, like, we have to get, like, right in front of the sucker. Like
can I come?
Yeah,
can I do it?
Like
okay.
A hard...
Oh, oh, did I do too hard? I did it too hard.
I don't think anyone was ready for that, but it happened.
It was on brand.
All right, well, rock on Pedal Hub, rock on Pop Till We Drop. Super fun.
Yeah, we'll be back next time with another special guest co-host. Thanks for listening.